Welcome to Double X Science. It's in your genes. Today is Saturday, June 22nd, 2013. I am Adrienne Rorick, chemistry editor, and with me today is Jeff Perkel, tech editor at Double X Science. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Adrienne.
I was just wondering, what are your plans for this summer?
We're heading out to your neck of the woods to Seattle this summer, and then to North Carolina so the kids can visit their grandparents.
Oh, fun.
And you?
Well, we just moved at the beginning of the summer. It's one reason why this podcast went on a few-week hiatus. And so the rest of our summer is basically enjoying our new house and any fair weather that Seattle chooses to throw at us.
Oh, well, that sounds fun.
Yep. So let's move on to our week of posts. This time we are going to cover actually all the posts that we've missed during our hiatus, so we better get going on those. Since May 24th, the date of the last podcast, we've run about 9 stories. Jeff, it looks like you wrote an article on chasing tornadoes as an old habit. Could you tell me about that post?
Basically, it was kind of a book review of a book that I just happened to be reading. I saw actually a review in the New York Times that was prompted by the fact that there were just have been a whole bunch of, you know, big tornado stories. And the book was called Storm Kings, The Untold History of America's First Tornado Chasers by Lee Sandlin. The New York Times article is basically pointing out the fact that there was this new book that just happened to be out. And it was an interesting read, a very fast read, and so I wrote basically a book review about it and also just talked about the fact that I've had kind of a lifelong interest in severe weather, which none of which I've ever actually experienced myself, so it's an interest born out of, you know, watching things on TV and not actually having experienced it. But it was a really, really fun book. And if you're interested in the history of tornadoes and storm chasing, it's definitely an excellent book.
Might be of interest, especially to those that live in Tornado Alley. I grew up in Nebraska and also lived there during a portion of being an adult. And we experienced a number of tornadoes and severe weather. I always found it slightly interesting. I'm not necessarily afraid of tornadoes, but I never liked the going into a cellar or underground location for safety.
Like I said, I definitely found them interesting, but I'm not sure that I'd actually want to see one near my home. They're beautiful. They look beautiful on television.
Yeah.
My children saw one once driving across the country with my in-laws. They saw one in Wyoming.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, so they've seen that, but I never have. It was moving away from them, luckily, so no risk.
Well, and there's some extreme weathers and whatnot I'd be happy to never face.
Exactly. Also, in the past week, we had an article by Chris Gunter on the Supreme Court decision in the Myriad Genetics case, which is a very interesting post and a very, very big bit of news for genetics and women, frankly. For those who don't know, the Myriad Genetics ruling, Myriad Genetics is a Salt Lake City-based genetic testing company which has held the patents on 2 genes associated with familial risk of breast and ovarian cancer, BRCA1 and BRCA2, and they have the patent on those genes, and they have very aggressively defended those patents, prevented anybody else essentially from offering testing, competing testing. Since there's no competition, basically they can charge whatever they want, and the test is something like $3,000 or $4,000. You know, some researchers have said, you know, it's precluded them from studying the genes or doing certain kind of research. In any event, a number of organizations sued, or a number of people sued Myriad, and this week the Supreme Court ruled, or last week, the Supreme Court ruled that those patents are invalid, that you cannot patent a human gene sequence. The act of discovering it does not make it patentable. And so that means we can expect to see more competition in the BRCA gene testing market. And in fact, a number of companies have already announced that they would be offering those services.
Well, that's fantastic. I remember being highly offended when companies began to patent genes because, you know, you walk around with genes in your body. And just because they know what that gene is and what it does, I mean, in theory, then just by walking around and being, you would have to pay royalties or something to them. That's kind of an extreme idea, and perhaps not how it legally works, but that was kind of the insinuation, I think, when this whole thing came up a number of years ago. So I'm very happy, actually, with this ruling. I think this was a great ruling by the SCOTUS.
And remarkably, it was unanimous. You don't see too many unanimous decisions from the court these days.
No, you don't.
And I should mention that although the case specifically involved Myriad's patents on the BRCA genes, there's something like 4,000 or 20% of human genes are thought to be patented. So this is obviously far wider ranging. The Supreme Court, I should also say, did uphold some other Myriad patents on what's called complementary DNA or cDNA. Some people are unhappy with that, but the company argued and the Supreme Court agreed that cDNA is not a product of nature and is patentable.
Okay.
But people question as to whether or not, you know, that actually means anything or what that really means. So, we'll
yeah, that's one of those things. I think it's similar to the issue when this issue came up of this is something we can do now. What are the legal limits for it? And we have to let that play out because it's not always immediately apparent.
Exactly.
Well, some other posts we had since May 24th was a post by our health editor, Tara Haley, about early puberty among adoptees. And she was looking at if this early puberty is actually a problem and does it need to be addressed. We had Calculating Vaccine Risks by contributor Allison Haygood. She was looking at the actual statistical risks of getting a vaccine and what that really means and trying to figure out what are the actual associated risks. Contributor Jenny Morber wrote a post on arousal during rape, and there is, of course, a trigger warning due to the discussion of rape, rape survivor testimonies, and rape myths. And the point is that, yes, arousal during rape can happen, but what its implications are may not be what some people think. And I actually recall when this post went out via social media, there was a lot of chatter on it. So it's definitely a post to check out if you haven't already, because the discussion, I think, is ongoing. Our editor-in-chief, Emily Willingham, at the end of May, wrote a very fun post called Five Reasons Mermaids Are Impossible. Jeff, you read this post. Could you go in a little bit more depth about that one?
Sure. Emily wrote that post because the Animal Planet had just done apparently wildly popular, for them anyway, a faux documentary about the discovery of mermaids, or the possibility of mermaids. I didn't actually watch the thing. But basically, it's not a real documentary. It's a faux documentary talking about the existence of mermaids. And apparently, it's like the most widely watched program in the network's history. And so Emily wrote a very fun post basically saying, here's why mermaids are impossible. And not the least of which is things like, you know, you slap the top of a woman's body onto the bottom of a fish and you've got all sorts of problems like where does the poop go? How do you make more mermaids? And not to mention other things like have you ever looked at your skin when you're submerged in salt water for a few minutes? You know, could you imagine living in it? Yeah, it's a fun post and you can detect her exasperation in the writing. It's definitely a good one to read.
Yeah, it would be fun even to follow that one up with a sort of a history of mermaids, because if I'm not mistaken, the original sort of animal that the mermaid myth was made upon was by sailors who'd been at sea for far too long and were perhaps a little delusional, seeing a manatee. These are, first of all, not very attractive animals, so I think it's hilarious that these delusional sailors would create a mythology of that it looked like a female fish, basically, if you consider what a mermaid is.
Yeah, a manatee doesn't look anything like
a person.
They're very interesting creatures. They bear no resemblance to women or to fish, and they're mammals. And
yeah.
If anything, I suppose they look like cows.
So,
yeah. Clearly, the sailors have been breathing the salt air for a bit too long.
Yep. So, and if I'm wrong on that, I'd love for people to go ahead and tweet at me and let me know. We also had a post by contributor Joss Fong called Sizing Up the Mother in Me. And it's just a discussion of if motherhood is really worth it, what her mother has gotten out of motherhood, and whether she will pursue motherhood or not, and what the decision to have children means. So it's an interesting op-ed. And we've also had another post by our editor-in-chief, Emily Willingham, called He Found Out He Has Ovaries, where a rare co-occurrence of two conditions masked the sex characteristics of this person. And then we also had another post by Tara Haley, our health editor, on pacifiers and breastfeeding. Now, if anyone's a parent, they know that there is a big controversy on pacifiers and breastfeeding. Are pacifiers complementary to breastfeeding, and are they not? And what their implications are. And the question of this article is, when they took away pacifiers in the hospital, breastfeeding rates drop, which is actually counter to what the general consensus is on pacifiers and breastfeeding. So this would be a particularly interesting read for those who have babies and have a big interest in those details of pacifiers and breastfeeding. So that about sums up our posts that we've had at XX Science for the past few weeks. You can find all of those posts at our website, XXScience.org, by clicking on the links to the post title on the main page. In addition to our XX Science site postings, our sister site, XX Science Jr., had two posts this week. We had a post on Shark Clones, a story of parthenogenesis, in which the writer was inspired by a recent lecture that was attended, and another post on Dr. Irene Helen Battle, a Canadian scientist and teacher with her doctorate in marine biology. And you can go ahead and read that post on her. And I especially like that we've got some posts on XX Science Jr. on some scientists, because they tie in well with our Notable Women in Science series, which I write. And you can find the XX Science Jr. posts at xxsciencejr.blogspot.com, where the junior is the abbreviation JR. And you can follow the link from the xxscience.org main page to XX Science Jr. Now on to our news. Jeff, what science news have you been reading this week?
So there was a big story this week about the brain, Adrian. There was a paper in Science published June 20th, so published just this week in Science, about a project called the Big Brain Project that basically mapped the entire brain of a, obviously dead, 65-year-old woman at 20 micrometer resolution in three dimensions. And basically, I have to read part of this. The story was published in Science. I'm reading a news write-up about it in Nature. There were 7,400 brain slices, each thinner than a human hair. They ran a microscope for 1,000 continuous hours and generated 1 trillion bytes of data. You can actually view and explore this data set through the Big Brain website, which is, I believe, at McGill University in Canada. It's a really interesting study. Basically, what's interesting here is that it's the first time that a human brain has been mapped at this resolution, which is just far higher resolution than was previously ever done, certainly higher than you would achieve with like magnetic resonance imaging. It's a really cool data set. The data are publicly available. You have to register at the website. It's at bigbrain.cbrain.mcgill.ca. So it's McGill University in Canada. It's a very interesting time to be a neurobiologist. I'm guessing there's a lot of big news going on in brain research these days.
I just clicked on the news story you're looking at in Nature, and the opening picture looks like it's the actual imaging device of it where they are actually perhaps the slicing where it says they use a special tool called a microtome to cut a human brain preserved in paraffin wax into 20 micrometer thick slivers. So they're using this actually in this picture. Then what they're doing is cutting these slices into the size that they want to do this imaging, and it is quite frankly fascinating. I'm a chemist, but this is fascinating.
Yeah, it's like far, far thinner than prosciutto, I'm guessing. I mean, I'm guessing those slices are pretty thin. They look paper thin.
They look paper thin, and I think those are coming out. Wow, what a great story. We'll have links to the news article that's in Nature in our show notes. That wraps up our week at Double X Science. Thank you, Jeff, for joining me.
Thank you. So coming up, we're going to have lots of new content. You can check our Twitter feed at XXSci or our website, XXScience.org. And you can also expect new posts from XX Science Junior. And you can look forward to those in the next week and months ahead.
Great. And thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. And if you are enjoying the podcast, please rate our podcast and leave a review at iTunes to help bring science to more people. Our music is provided by Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. Our artwork is by Dallas Lopez. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, which Jeff mentioned. This has been Chemistry Editor Adrian Rurick and Tech Editor Jeff Perkel. We are XX Science, bringing science to the woman in you.